Okay, what I want to do is I want to begin looking at this question of le passé dans le présent. And the secret here is to make sure that you have points of comparison. Because if one of your articles talks about a statue that people would like not to be there anymore, that people would like to remove, then with a bit of luck, this is the past in the present, yeah? And with a bit of luck, you can give two more examples of statues that people wanted to be moved, yeah? That's the thing, yeah? Instead of just saying, this is linked to the subject, le passé dans le présent, you have two more examples. Or you could say, this is typical, or this is not typical, yeah, that you can put it into the context there. And I'm sure you'll be able to. So, I'm going to look at le passé dans le présent. Now, how many people here are going to be in my seminar on the First World War? Oh, that's great. We'll have a great war. I say this because obviously it's also connected to le passé dans le présent. Commémoration, ça tombe bien. Okay. My speciality is popular song during the First World War. I am the world expert on British popular song during the First World War. It's very, very specific. It's very, very small, but I know about it, and nobody else does. Okay, so le passé dans le présent, what does that mean? What kind of questions could that bring up? Well, these are the four topics I would like to look at. And I will put on the blog a collection of news articles of a series of debates and protests and arguments recently about these questions. But here are the four themes I'm going to look at today and next week. First of all, the explosion of memory. Secondly, schools and museums. Thirdly, occupying public space. And thirdly, fourthly, debates, apologies and protests. Now, the explosion of memory. That's not about bombs, yeah? This is an expression which was invented by a historian about 30 years ago. And he said that, you know, our view of history is getting more, we put more and more importance on the history of experience. What was it like for soldiers during the First World War? What was life like in the 18th century or before the revolution or etc.? This is the explosion of instead of writing history books about the king did this, and the king did this, and the government did this. We're now very much interested in a memory, a popular memory of experience. And that's become more and more important. If you go to museums today, they will be much... You know, did your great-great-grandfather fight in this war, yeah? Now, it depends, of course, on the museum, because sometimes it's rather delicate. They just opened 2 weeks ago a new museum in Paris, Musée de la Libération de Paris. Mais ils ne vont pas mettre « Cherchez ici pour savoir si votre grand-père était collabo ou non. » There are things that, you know, people want to forget, you know. But that is a general thing. Schools and museums are very important because, and of course, some people think history is very important. I'm a historian. It's my life. So, but certainly in schools, there's lots of teaching history. It's interesting because, you know, when you talk about what should be taught in schools, some people say, Latin, well, it's not very important. And some people say, yes, it's important, it's a debate. But I think almost everybody thinks history is important in school. Now, people often don't know why they think it's important, but it's generally, oh yeah, you have to learn history. Yeah, good. So what kind of history do you learn in schools? This is the past and the present, because schools are the present, yeah, and universities and so on. Even today, in fact, it's interesting, in your English degree, you did literature, civilisation, and linguistique. And this is quite new. 30 years ago, there was only literature. And then there was a fight to bring in civilisation, which at the time was mostly history. It was civilisation mostly history in your degree? Yeah. A bit of cultural studies, but mostly history. Okay, so this was a fight, and then there was another fight to bring linguistics in. So it's an opinion, yeah? There are still countries where you do an English degree and you only do literature. Well, it's possible. Yeah. Which is not good for me, because I know nothing about literature. Occupying public space. Now, if you're a historian, every time you walk past a statue, you say, oh, who's that?
off?
Oh, I don't know. I better Google it. Now, I know that not everybody, most people are normal human beings and not historians. And very often, we walk past statues every day and we don't even know who they are. Who's that statue? Of course, some of them we know. But the putting statues in public places and the names of streets and the names of towns, all of this is the past and the present, yeah? Les avenues Maréchal Pétain, il y en a plus en France. Il y en avait, il y en a plus. That these are the kind of debates going on. And then finally then debates, apologies and protests, because some of the stories are quite difficult to fix. For example, a famous example, in the British Museum there is half of the Parthenon marbles from Athens. And the other half are in Athens. That's not quite true. It's about 30%, and then the rest is spread around the world. And the Greek government is not happy. They would like to have all of it back in Athens. I was lucky. I was in Athens last November, and they have a museum with the part of our... And then they have a picture with... Marked in red is all the pieces which the English stole. Really, I'm like, you know, oui, moi je suis français, hein? Okay, so that's what we're going to be looking at. So to think about, how does the past appear today? What questions does it open? Because again, the idea, really, you're not supposed to show, I mean, obviously you need to know things, but you're not supposed to show you're an expert. But if you can show that you know what are some important questions which need exploring, that's good. If you don't give the impression that history is a list of facts, that's good. If you give the impression that history is a list of questions, that's pretty good. That's what I always say about questions. The heritage industry and authorised heritage discourse. So the heritage industry, donc littéralement, l'industrie du patrimoine, non, mot à mot, l'industrie du patrimoine. Now, heritage industry, that sounds bizarre. Now, the first thing, a little bit of vocabulary for you. Industry n'égale pas industrie. In English we say, my brother works in the tourist industry. My auntie works in the banking industry. Yeah, so the word industry is much wider than the word industrie. Donc ce serait le secteur touristique et le secteur bancaire. So it's, we're not surprised to see the word industry here in English. Whereas I think in French you would. And heritage then, the heritage industry, so making money from heritage. Did any? I know it's a long way for you, but did anybody go to the exhibition of Tutankhamun in Paris? Did you know there was one? Yeah. Okay. It made a lot of money. This is a big money. That millions of people went, and it cost €20. Yeah. So that would be now that's Egyptian heritage, but still, you know, there is money to be made here. And authorized heritage discourse. That is the idea of an official discourse about heritage. Sometimes we talk in French about le roman national, you know, the official view of history. Because if you have a museum, you have to choose. You can't just put things from the past. Every day in the past there were 1,000 things. So you have to make an absolute specific choice. So you are bound to give an opinion about the past. You can't avoid it. And an authorized heritage discourse is about what is the official view. So for example, in Britain, the official authorised heritage discourse generally says the important thing about Britain and slavery is that Britain abolished slavery before the others. Well, as you know, one might consider that that is not the most important thing about it. Let's have a look at some examples. This is a big organisation. They have a lot of money. It's an association. They have a lot of money. When people die, they sometimes leave their money. If they have money, they sometimes leave their money to Historic England. I think it used to be called English Heritage. It's a big organisation. And what they do is they protect and preserve and conserve and organise and valorise old places. Yeah. So, for example, if you go to Stonehenge, or if you go to, what's that big palace near Oxford? Blenheim Palace, or what's the other palace near London, but not in London? Or the Tower of London. The English Heritage, they organise these places. It's quite big money. Well, although their main aim is not money, but it's quite big money. And look, we protect, this is their slogan, this is their website, we protect, champion and save places that define who we are. So this is a very ideological slogan. So what is important about Stonehenge and the Tower of London and Blenheim Palace? Well, whenever I don't know who I am, I look at Stonehenge and Blenheim Palace and the Tower of London, then I know who I am. It's a little bit bizarre. But it's an idea of, you know, the what is heritage? This is how we know who we are. This is the official discourse. Now, I'm a little cynical, but you don't have to be. It's not obligatory. So it's very ideological. They have to decide what they have to make choices. There are many, many old buildings, and some of them will be demolished, and others of them will be preserved. Now, ideas have changed a lot. In the 1930s, the military wanted a new airport, and they proposed to demolish Stonehenge to build an airport, which today is extremely shocking. Yeah, but in the 1930s, this was a real debate. Yeah, maybe we'll demolish Stonehenge, which is... has anybody been to Stonehenge? Yeah, isn't it fabulous? Did you like it? Yeah. That's very, very impressive. Very impressive. Also, they know a lot more about Stonehenge now than they knew 10 years ago. The science is moving forward. Don't let me get off the subject. I could talk about Stonehenge all day. So here's an example of the activity of Historic England. So this is the past and the present. This is what people are doing today to attract visitors, tourists, and quite a sort of educational tourism, school groups, etc. This is what they're doing. So here is an example. Scale and splendour, volunteers work to restore Wentworth Woodhouse. So this is an old building. Who used to live there? Rich people or poor people? Yeah, right. So one of the things is that the vast majority of Historic England's buildings are places where rich people used to live. Now, those are interesting. Well, first of all, they last longer, so there is a reason. They are more splendiferous. In general, if you go to a country you've never been to, like Colombia, say, oh, would you like to see where the poor people live and take photographs, or the rich people? Well, it's kind of prettier, the rich people, really, isn't it? But you see some more things here. Volunteers work to restore it. So they're going to restore it, and a lot of the work is not going to be paid. It's going to be volunteers doing it. So if they're prepared to work for nothing, it's because they believe that there's something important about this. It's about identity. It's about our history. But there's something going on. And these are questions. I don't have the answers. And so this is the sort of thing which, the sort of events and activities which make the past in the present. Now, the past is in the present all the time. You have commemoration. Every year you all go to a commemoration. It's called your birthday. Okay, now that's an easy one. But you know, the commemorations all the time. But in the last 20 or 30 years, the idea of the past and the present of commemorating has changed a lot. First of all, UNESCO, the United Nations Educational and Cultural Organization, has now an official World Cultural Heritage List. And places want to be on the list, so Stonehenge is on the UNESCO list, and people fight about being on the list, yeah? Because if you're on the list, you can get money more easily and stuff. But look at this. The UNESCO list has just added reggae music. Now, this is something different. And this is part of a transformation where little by little, people are considering that the past which we need to remember and celebrate is not just the past of the elites. Now, reggae music is not the music of the elites. So it's very interesting. There are changes going on. A lot of complicated and rather slow changes, but there is a change in to say that today the past lives of ordinary people are being slowly considered more important. Even if you go to a palace these days, if you go to Blenheim Palace in Oxford, today there will be two rooms about the life of servants in this house a century ago. 50 years ago, there was no room, no information about the life of servants because they weren't important. You see this also. I'm sure some people who likes Downton Abbey. Okay. That's 12 people. 8 people said yes, and 4 people are too ashamed to mention it. Okay. It tells the story of the rich and of their servants, and it's interesting because there was a very similar series 50 years ago called Upstairs Downstairs, and the vision of the servants has completely changed. So Downton Abbey is really propaganda in favour of aristocracy, but it's very intelligent propaganda, and there is a real space for the servants in there. So past and the present, cultural heritage, and so on. Let's have a look at schools now. You are in this most of you do not have children, and so you're in this little space where you are allowed not to care about schools for a few years. Okay. But obviously history in schools has a certain importance, not just because everybody learns it and then forgets most of it, but nevertheless they remember something about it, and it has changed tremendously. When I was at school, it was absolutely a list of things which great men had done. Napoleon did 7 good things and 4 bad things. I'm not exaggerating. That's what we were told, yeah? I can only remember one of the good things, which was the code civil. Apparently this was a good thing. I guess the bad things were being at war with England. Although the good thing was losing the war with England. Okay, so official history in schools. And so I thought it'd be interesting to look at today's school books in English schools. And what are they saying? Now, obviously, they're saying a lot of things, so we can't see everything. So I just chose 3 or 4 of the most popular history books in British schools. Now, these are not books, when you've left school, you don't really read them again, do you? In fact, if you read about history after school, first of all, it's probably a historical novel, because that's what people like, or it might be a history book, but it won't be a school book. So let's take this one first, 1066 to 1500, year 7. So year 7, I think they are 11, 12 years old. And we're only going to look at the front pages, and it is... The Roman Empire and Britain, 1066 to 1500. And you just have 2 people on the front page, and already I can see that it's not the same as when I went to school. Because when I went to school, if you wanted to illustrate the Roman Empire, you would definitely have Julius Caesar or Augustus Caesar. You wouldn't have a woman. I mean, when I was at school, in the history books, women didn't do anything. They were just absent, yeah? So you can see that there is it's not an accident that they have a Roman woman on there. It's not an accident. They're saying that, you know, we're going to talk about Julius Caesar, but we're also going to make sure that we have a more inclusive view of the world. The other one is King John, who is the guy who was obliged to sign the Magna Carta in... 1215, 2 marks down here. Yeah. 1215, the Magna Carta. I can come back to that if you wish. Some years ago, I did a series of lectures. I did 6 hours. Britain since the Romans in 6 hours. And I will give you the link on the blog if you're interested. If you are MP3 people, but it's a city spot. Okay, let's have a look at another one. These people are a little bit older. History year 8. Here, 8. So this is going to be 17th and 18th century, or 17th, 18th and 19th century. I think 17th and 18th century. We're only looking at the pictures. Although this was published in 2009, it's still the most popular one today. I checked on Amazon. Yeah? And again, we have 2 pictures. The first one is Elizabeth I. The Queen. Okay, so that's fairly traditional. That probably could have been in my history book. But who is the other gentleman? You have a black man on the front page. This is new. Yeah, this is recent. Anybody know who he is? This is Mr. Equiano, Aluda Equiano. He was one of the leaders of the movement in Britain to abolish slavery. He was born a slave, and he was very lucky because he met some Christians who bought his freedom and taught him to read and write. And he spent many years going from town to town talking about slavery. And thousands of people came to see him. A lot of people came to see him because they had never seen a black person in their lives, you know. But obviously he was a very powerful speaker, because I was a slave, listen to me. It's quite a good argument, yeah. So Aluda Equiano. So obviously it's in England, of course, the majority of leaders of the movement to abolish slavery were white, because it was so much more easy to do politics if you were white. But they decided to put on the front page the black leader. So again, there's a definite move towards a more inclusive history. Now, I'm not trying to pretend that it's all perfect, but there is a move in what I consider to be the right direction. Finally then, the 20th century, year 9, so now they are 14 years old. And we have two people here, Gandhi, again an anti-colonialist, yeah? And the other one, a rather surprising one, this is Sylvia Pankhurst. Now, there were a group of Pankhursts, all of them suffragettes. Emmeline Pankhurst was the mother. She now has a statue just next to the Houses of Parliament. And there were two daughters, Christabel Pankhurst, who later became a Conservative Member of Parliament, and Sylvia Pankhurst, who joined the Communist Party. So they had a split at the beginning of the First World War. The suffragette movement was really big at the beginning of the First World War, and there was a complete divide. The majority of the movement said, we will stop the movement and support the war. The newspaper, The Suffragette, changed its name to Britannia. Okay. And a minority broke away and was against the war. Okay, so an exciting story. But again, now this, it does seem, I'm surprised that I didn't choose my favourite books. This is just the most popular books, you know. So there is definitely a move, a change in what history is taught in schools. But I think in any case, if you have a general question about the past and the present, schools are important. Because even if you're not, everybody's a little bit interested in history. Because when you read, if you read a magazine, there will be something on history. If you go to the cinema, it will be sometimes connected to history and so on. But I think schools are important that they have that. The other place is museums. Oh, sorry, that's an old one from 50 years ago. Britain's Heritage, Book 2. No, from 100 years ago, I think it was in the 1930s. The second thing is museums. Now, museums are rather strange things. More and more people go to museums, and there are more and more museums. In fact, bizarrely enough, every time they open new museums, they find more people want to go. You create demand. I think people want more to go to museums after they left university 10 years ago, and so they haven't had so much. They have a little more space, you know. Also, historians go to museums. If I'm on holiday, if I go more than 3 days without a museum, I'm like really bad, yeah. Okay, so museums. So very important places. There are big museums and small museums. And of course, the most famous museums are museums like the British Museum in London, which is free, which is wonderful, where you get, you know, stuff from everywhere in the world. In most cases, some of it's stolen, but still, it's all very pretty. Here is an example of a recent museum, the International Slavery Museum, which is in Liverpool. The reason it's in Liverpool is that Liverpool was built with the money from slavery. And there are a few interesting things about this. First of all, the fact that it exists. It was opened in the 21st century. For the first time, donc on peut pas dire qu'ils étaient pressés pour en parler, hein? Yeah. So it's a new event. And secondly, if you look at it, the approach is very difficult. Look at this: life in West Africa before the slave trade. So they are not simply talking about the crime of the slave trade, they're also trying to demonstrate an interest and a respect for previous civilizations. Which is my excuse for a key dates quiz. Abolition of the slave trade in Britain. When was the slave trade abolished in the British Empire? Say again? Not bad, 1807. That's not bad, it's not bad, yeah. You see, at the very beginning of the 19th century. You're fine. 1807, okay, now that's the abolition of the slave trade. But after the abolition of the slave trade, people could still be slaves. They just couldn't be traded. And so the abolition of slavery. Yes, 1833, 2 points over there. Yeah, 1807, 1833. Now, on this particular question, the French both won and lost because they abolished slavery in 1792. And a beautiful scene in the revolutionary parliaments. Somebody came from the West Indies and said, I propose the abolition of slavery. And the president of the parliament said, I will not insult you all by asking for a debate. And they voted unanimously for the abolition of slavery. Not class. But Napoleon brought it back again, and it was abolished again in 1848. Well, thank you for staying awake, and I'll see you next week. C'est tard quand même, 18h30. Hein? Oh là. Oui.
If you had to recommend one newspaper for broad students, what's The Guardian? Maybe?
Yeah, The Guardian. Also, it's free.
Yeah.
Also, it's free. And it is good. It's a good newspaper, yeah. The one thing that you can do, and I think you can get it in the library downstairs, is that there is a Guardian Weekly.
Yeah. The Guardian is daily.
Oh yeah, The Guardian is daily, which is good. But the advantage of the weekly is that it's not so much to do, yeah?
I'll go with the weekly.
Yeah, the weekly is pretty good.
Thank you.
Au revoir. Au revoir.